Most of 1 Corinthians was written, as you know, to rebuke the church at Corinth and, quite frankly, to correct the chaos that was existing in their life as well as in their church. We've learned over the last several months, really since the beginning of the year, a lot of negative lessons from this book to prevent the same chaos from occurring in our lives as well as in our church. But now as we come to these final verses of the 16th chapter, we're given some positive considerations, not so much negative lessons that were present in the Corinthian people to learn from, but some positive considerations, some things to keep in mind as we continue on our journey in the Christian life. And there's three things predominantly that Paul writes about in verses 5 through 14, positive things that I think we can just take one by one here, apply them to our lives, and help us as we make our daily decisions as it relates to the Christian life that God has passed out for us to walk. And here's the first one that I want you to see, and it's found in verses 5 through 12, which is the majority of the verses in our text today. But here's the first point that you'll see as you can write down in your notes this morning. Number one, acknowledge the doors of opportunity. Acknowledge the doors of opportunity. Look with me there in verse number 9, because we see this door spoken about as Paul's writing here. Verse 9 says, a great door, that's a powerful door, and effectual, that's an effective door. A great and effective door is opened unto me. Now acknowledge the doors of opportunity. And I want to remind you as believers this morning, as we see here exemplified in Paul's life, that there are moments in our life when God gives us divine opportunities. We refer to these as open doors. God has opened a door. I have a door that's opened unto me. This is a moment in our life that God has given us a divine opportunity. And that's exactly what was happening here in Paul's life. As you know, he was writing this letter to the church at Corinth, but he wasn't in Corinth. He wasn't sitting in the office of the church at Corinth. No, he was actually in the city of Ephesus. And as he's writing to Corinth from the city of Ephesus, he says, I want to come and I want to see you. And I want to see you soon. Look at verse number 5. He says, I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia. Verse 6, and it may be that I will abide, yea, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. He says, listen, I'm here in Ephesus, but my heart's with you. I want to see you. I'm going to be going to Macedonia here soon. And I do hope that as I go to Macedonia, that I'll be able to stop and see you and maybe even spend all winter with you and enjoy this Christian fellowship that we have. But the Lord had something different in mind. As a matter of fact, God, though Paul wanted to leave Ephesus, though Paul wanted to go to Corinth, God said, that's not my will, Paul. That's your will. Because the opportunity that I've opened up for you is right here in Ephesus. God had opened a door for Paul not to go to Corinth at that time, but to stay at Ephesus. The opportunities were in Ephesus. Look at verse number 8. Paul says, but I will tarry, I will stay at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door and effectual is opened unto me. So here's the background of what Paul is saying here. He says, I've got this plan. I've got this desire. I want to go to Corinth. But God said, no, don't go to Corinth. The door that I've opened for you, the opportunity that I have for you is right here in Ephesus. And I think there are three things we can learn from this opportunity, this door that Paul had. Here's the first one there in your notes. There are moments in our life. There are moments in our life when God does open doors of opportunity. But the emphasis here is that God opens the doors. There are moments in our life that God opens the door. And look at the language that he uses here. Verse 9. This door was opened unto me, unto me. Paul didn't open the door. God opened the door. Have you ever wanted something so badly that you began to orchestrate and manipulate situations in order to make that something happen? Of course. I've been there. Rather than waiting on God to open the door, you shoved and you pulled and you pried and you pushed the door open. And then we try to reason it as, oh, look at this door that God has opened. God has done this. No, God didn't do that. You did that. You did that. I did that. We wanted it so badly. And we did everything we could to push it open. And when we did, we wanted to blame God for it. But the doors of opportunity that really bring blessing in our lives are the ones that God opens in our lives, not the ones that we push down in our lives. I've seen it happen in mine. I've seen it happen in the lives of others. You have as well. And people get themselves in a heap of trouble when they begin to manipulate, orchestrate, pry, pull, and push doors open that God never intended for them to have. Never. So what do we do? How do we know what's God's door? What was my door? Well, in the text, it's very clear that number one, we need to be prayerful about open doors. Look at verse 7. He says, I will not see you now, by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you. Notice this, if the Lord permit. That phrase, if the Lord permit, took Paul out of the equation. He wasn't denying the fact that he wanted to go to Corinth. Of course, he never once denied the fact that he wanted to leave Ephesus and go to Corinth. Never once. But he made sure that he and Corinth knew in the meantime, but the only way I'm going to Corinth is if the Lord permits it to happen. He was prayerful about it. I want to come see you. I want to leave Ephesus. I want to spend the winter with you. But that's if the Lord permits me to do so, allows me to do so. And there may be some things in your life where you're waiting for God to open the door. And there's a great temptation between God opening the door and me trying to push the door open. Well, what do I do? How do I figure out which one is which? It begins by being prayerful. Be prayerful about open doors. If the Lord permits, I'm going to go here and do this. If the Lord permits, I'm going to walk through that door. If the Lord permits, this is the direction that I will go, the decision that I will make. We need to pray for open doors. Pray about them. It was in Colossians that Paul wrote in chapter 4 and verse 3, he said, pray also for us that God would open unto us a door. Pray that God will open a door. That's where it begins. Be prayerful about open doors. But the second thing I've written down here, and it may be in your notes, I'm not sure. Be flexible about open doors. Be flexible about open doors. Look at verse number 5. He said, I want to go with you and I want to abide winter with you. Verse 7, for I will not see you now by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you. He wanted to leave Ephesus, go to Macedonia, be in Corinth, but God was opening up a door for him to stay, a door which is quite interesting. would keep him there another 3 years. We don't see that in this particular passage, but when you study the book of Acts and you see the chronology of which Paul is making all these steps along the journey, you recognize that he stayed there another 3 years. Of course, when you see the heart of Paul's writing, that was never his desire and intent. He wanted to go right away, but he says, no, God's opened a door in Ephesus. I need to stay. I don't know how long I'll stay, but I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be flexible. When God opens the door, I come, but I'm not coming until God opens the door. And we know now that he stayed another 3 years. He had to be flexible. He had to be flexible. And the practical application of this in our lives is that your plans and my plans should always be subject to the Lord's revision in our lives. And that's where Jonathan gets himself in trouble. Because I chart the course, I make the plans, and we pray God's blessing on this. Lord, I want to go here. I want to do this. Lord, open up this door, and we make everything happen to push the door open, and we ask God to bless it. God bless it. God bless it. But when God doesn't bless it and God doesn't make it as easy as we thought it should be, we don't get very flexible. We're not very, very pliable. We want it our way, on our terms, in our time, but that's where we get ourselves in trouble. You got to be flexible. You got to put your plans and desires to the side and let the Lord revise them and let the Lord guide it and let the Lord have his way. Be prayerful. Be flexible. Can I say that this little third statement might be the most difficult? Be patient about open doors. Patient about them. Look at what Paul said in verse number 8. He's just said in verses 5, 6, and 7, I want to go see you. I want to leave Ephesus. I want to come to you. I want to be with you at least through winter. Look at verse 8. But I will tarry. In other words, I'm going to wait right here until. And he inserts the word Pentecost. His mindset was, you know what, I'm just going to be patient, at least stay through Pentecost until God opens the door. Be prayerful, yes. It's okay to pray for God to open the doors, even if he's not opening them right now in your life. God, open the door for a new job. Open the door in this for our family. Open the door for us to make clear decisions. It's okay to pray about that, but make sure you're always flexible and willing to do what God actually does, not what you have manipulated to take place. And if you get to that point in your life, make sure that you are patient. Patient on God. Lord, I'm not going to push the door. I'm not going to mess my family up by running them everywhere and doing this, that. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be patient. In other words, God, I'm not going to leave Ephesus until I am absolutely sure it is your will for me to do so. That's what he was saying in verse 8. But I'm just going to wait here. I want to come to you, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait. Because there's no way I'm leaving Ephesus until I am sure that it is God's will, that he has opened up the door for me to leave. There are moments in our life when God opens up the door, but until he does, I must be prayerful, I must be flexible, I must be patient. But the second thing under this first point of acknowledging doors of opportunity is this statement. You see it there in your notes. God's doors of opportunity always have his purpose in mind. When God opens up a door, newsflash, it's not about you. Newsflash, hello? God didn't give this to you because of you. He gave this to you because of him. Him. God's open doors always have his purpose in mind. Look at verse number 9. He says, a great door, an effectual door is open unto me. God opened the door for Paul, not because of Paul, but because of God. And it was a door that was great. It was a door that was an effectual, it was a powerful door. It was an effective door. It was a door that actually was going to bring blessing in Paul's life. And there's a very quick determination of whether or not you have broken down the door or whether or not God has opened the door. Was it a great door? Has it been an effective door? Because if it's a great and effective door, it was a door that God opened up in your life. And when he doesn't do so for our conveniences. Sometimes it's hard for us to understand that. God opening up the doors of opportunity in our life are not always for our conveniences, but they are always for his purposes. His purposes. There are moments in life that God opens the door. When he does, he always has his purpose in mind. But then there's a part of verse number 9 that we all need to take into consideration. And that is this third statement. Don't be discouraged by the opposition to God's open doors. Don't be discouraged by the opposition to God's open doors. Look at verse number 9 again. He says, God has opened a great door, an effectual door. It's open unto me. Now notice this. And there are many adversaries. Many difficulties. Much opposition. It's not always an easy door to walk through when God opens it. Someone has said doors of opportunity often swing on the hinges of opposition. Now, don't confuse what you have created as pushing the door down between what spiritual warfare really is in your life. But when God opens a door and you begin to walk through it, Satan is going to attack. He's going to bring adversity. We don't need to give up in the face of that adversity. We don't need to let down in the way of difficulty. Don't be afraid of the challenges that lie beyond the open door. Well, Pastor, it's apparent that God has opened this door in my life, but when I look at it, I see its adversity, I see its difficulty, I know what lies on the other side, and I'm not so sure that I want to go through it. Listen, Paul even acknowledged himself, I'd rather be in Corinth because it's easier in Corinth than it is in Ephesus, but the door that's been opened to me is to stay right put in Ephesus, and I am struggling with it. Because there's a lot of difficulty in Ephesus. And isn't that what we usually do? We push and pry and pull doors to be opened because we want things easier. But in a lot of cases, that which God has charted and planned for us faces a little bit of opposition. There's a verse in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse number 11. It's an interesting verse. I put it there in your notes. Here's what it says. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to be swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance happeneth to them all. Time and chance. Now that word chance doesn't mean luck. Time and luck. No. It's talking about divine opportunities that God allows. You know, listen, the reason the strong win the battle and the bread come to the wise and the riches come to men of understanding and favor to men of skill is because there was a moment in their life at the right time and the right opportunity, God opened the door for them. That's how it came. It was of God. It was a door of opportunity at the right time. Time at the right opportunity. And the moral of that verse is this: wait for it. Because bread may not be coming to you, and strength for the battle may not be coming to you, and riches may not be coming to you, and favor may not be coming to you, because the time and the opportunity is not right. But if you wait for it, and you acknowledge the doors, and you walk through the doors, then time and chance, time and opportunity will be a door that God brings divine blessings. It's so interesting that we can learn so much from these verses of Paul just simply saying to the church at Corinth, hey, I want to leave and come to you. But the door that God opened to me was not there, it was here. And I can't go anywhere. I can't go anywhere until I am absolutely sure that God has done this. The application for us in our lives is the fact that God is going to open up doors. We must acknowledge the doors of opportunity in our life. Whatever they may be, however he may be leading, wherever those doors may be located, acknowledge them and wait patiently for them and pray about that. And as you are sure that God has done it, walk through with boldness. And by the way, don't be discouraged at the adversity. Acknowledge the doors of opportunity. Here's the second thing that we learn as we come to verse number 13. The second thing is this. Walk in steps of maturity. So the first lesson, and these seem unrelated, they isolated even. The first lesson is acknowledge the doors of opportunity. The second lesson is I am to walk in steps of maturity. Look at verse 13. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men, be strong. All of these are progressive steps to Christian maturity. Now, I think every parent in here wants to see their children mature with their age, obviously. It can be quite discouraging to see our children remain at levels of immaturity when they should have already grown past that particular point in their life. For example, we don't want our children to be kept out of middle school because they're not potty trained yet. They should have already matured through this years ago. And our life as Christians is quite similar. Our lives have been designed to grow. It's been designed to mature. And it's not. It's not the will of the Father any more than it's not the will of a parent in this room for his children, our children, to remain infantile, to remain childish and immature spiritually. God wants you to grow up. He wants you to age. He wants you to mature. And it's a little out of place when you've been a child of the Father, a child of God for quite a bit of time, and you're still a little childish and immature and infantile in your behavior and mindset. Just as any parent is discouraged by that immaturity in their own flesh and blood, think about how God often feels when we don't grow up and become more like Him and more faithful to Him and more mature in Him. He's discouraged. I'm sure he's disappointed. He looks down on us and he says, well, there's my kid. He's ready for middle school and he's still in his diapers. Christian maturity. I'm to acknowledge doors of opportunity in my life, but I'm also to walk in steps of maturity. I'm to grow up. I'm to mature. I'm to be formed into the image of Jesus Christ. What is Christian maturity then? I believe that Christian maturity can be summed up by this: Christian people doing the basics well. That's Christian maturity. Christian people doing the basics well. Christian maturity is not being a preacher. Christian maturity is not being a Sunday school teacher. Christian maturity is not being recognized in Christian circles as some great Christian person. No, a Christian maturity is just all of us who believe in Jesus Christ, who are committed to doing the basics well, reading our Bibles, praying, being faithful to church, witnessing to the lost, growing in Jesus Christ. And Paul actually mentions several things in here that lead to that maturity. The first one is this. Number one, be alert. Be alert. Be alert. Look at verse 13. He says it in the opening two words. Watch ye. Be alert. Stand guard is what he is saying there. For you and I to reach Christian maturity and to walk daily in steps of maturity, we must live our lives on guard against Satan attacks. We must be alert to the temptations of this world. We must be constantly watching against the things of this world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life that wants to come and stand in the way of our Christ-like maturity. We need to be reminded that Satan is doing all that he can to gain an advantage over us. And we know just from a strict way of living that whoever has the advantage usually wins. Especially as you're applying it to sports analogies. Whoever has the advantage usually wins. For our Alabama fans, you know exactly what that meant last night. When Ole Miss had the advantage. They looked better. They were bigger, more talented. Their uniforms even are nicer. They had the advantage. They won. Listen, the thing is true in our lives about Satan and Christianity and spiritual warfare. Whoever has the advantage usually wins. Paul actually spoke about this in 2 Corinthians. He said in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11, he says, lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices or his strategies. He's saying, don't let your guard down against Satan's strategies on your life. Be alert to Satan's strategies. Be on guard against Satan's strategies. Because if you're not on guard, if you're not on alert, guess what? He's going to get an advantage of you. And whoever has the advantage usually wins. One of the ways that we mature is when we guard and protect our lives against Satan's strategies. And most of us live our lives every day not alert to his attacks on our lives, on our marriages, in our children, in our walk with him. We're not on guard. And those of you who travel frequently, and I'm in airports just about every month going somewhere preaching. Or so. I was just in one this weekend, was reminded of it again as I was coming home from Baltimore, and I saw that sign there, and it has all the different colors. You know what I'm talking about? You got the red, the green, the orange, the yellow, and it's all listed down, and it talks about terrorist alert, attack alert, what code is it today, and it elevates it based upon the alert that may be out there in the world and the political climate and the news and information that TSA had. This is what kind of alert we are on today. It's an orange alert. It's a green alert. It's a yellow. Let us know, hey, be on guard. Be aware. The alert is high. And listen to me, in the Christian life, there is never a variation of how high and strong the alert is. It is always high. It is always strong. We ought to always be on guard because the attack could come at any moment, at any time in our life. That's why Paul said, watch. Be aware, be alert. Be on guard. I think the most ignorant statement a Christian can ever make is that it will never happen to me. That's true. That's so ignorant. is so ignorant to think that it'll never happen to you. And whatever it is, whatever sin it may be, whatever danger, whatever advantage Satan has in your life, whatever strategy he's coming over you, it is ignorant, immature, childish, infantile to suggest that that could never happen to you. It could never happen to me. So ignorant. Because once we begin to think that, we've let our guard down. And it's at that moment he has the advantage and it begins to happen to us. Be alert, Paul says. Watch, stand guard. As a matter of fact, it might be good there in your notes or in your Bible or somewhere that you write this statement down. This is really good. This is life-changing. If you missed anything else, I want you to write down these four words. Here it is. Ready? Satan is after me. Satan is after me. He's after me. Watch. Be careful. Stand guard. Lest he get an advantage over you. Not only does Paul say in this verse to be alert, but number two, he says to stand firm as it relates to walking in maturity. Look at the next little phrase there in verse 13. Not only are we to watch, but he says stand fast in the faith. Stand fast in the faith. Be firm. It refers to our consistent walk with Christ and our unwavering faithfulness to his truth. Stand fast in the faith. Be firm. Don't be up and down, back and forth, unstable. No, be always abounding. Be faithful. Be consistent. Be firm. Know your book. Understand doctrine. Love God. Be firm in the faith. And I wonder this morning, are you standing firm in your faith? Are you firm in your Bible reading? Are you firm in prayer? Are you firm in sharing the gospel? Are you firm in assembling together weekly with other believers? He says, be careful, because here's what's going to hurt your maturity. It's when you're not watching and when you're not firm in your faith. It's when you don't grow up. It's when you don't mature. It's not the moment that you reach Christ likeness. And then this third one, which combines really the two final phrases together, and it's this: not only be alert and stand firm, but number three, grow up. Grow up. For those of you who've been a part of our church any amount of time, especially as it relates to our men's conference that we have, the Man Up Conference, this verse is the passion behind it. It says here, to quit you like men, be strong. That phrase literally means to man up, be a man, grow up, quit you like men. The basic idea of this phrase is the courage that we need in our lives to be a leader, to be a leader, to be strong, to have Christian manliness and leadership in our lives, to not be weak, be strong, not childish, be mature. Quit you like men, be strong. And that can all be summed up in this idea of growing up. Grow up, be a man, be strong. Have courage, have manliness, spiritually maturity, have leadership in your life, leadership in your home, leadership in the church, leadership with the gospel, leadership where you work. Be strong. Be a strong Christian. Be a mature Christian. Quit you like men. Be strong. That's the goal. The goal is to be like Christ. The goal is to achieve Christ's likeness. The goal is to grow up. And so I walk in steps of maturity. I'm alert. I'm on guard. I'm standing firm. I'm unwavering. Nothing's going to move me away from the faith. Nothing's going to get me out of church. I'm firm in the faith. And all along, I'm growing up. I'm learning to be a leader. I'm learning to be strong. I'm learning to be the person that God wants me to be. That's the idea. Grow up. Mature. Man up. Quit you like men. Be strong. Be courageous. Be a leader. God has designed you for more. There are no shortage of people in this world who brag about their goodness. No shortage of that. Proverbs even talks about it. I think it's Proverbs 20. There's a verse in Proverbs chapter 20 that talks about every man proclaims his own goodness. There's no shortage of people out there that want you to know how good they are. But courageous people, mature people, faithful Christians. Now, those are hard to find. It's easy to find people who talk about how good they are. But to really find courageous, faithful, mature followers of Jesus Christ, it's often a difficult thing. As a matter of fact, the rest of that verse in Proverbs says, every man proclaims his own goodness, but a faithful man, a mature man, is hard to find. God is not so much interested in what you say that you are, as much as he is interested in who you really are. And I would go as far as to say that in the midst of a world of narcissistic, selfie-type living, that God is not so interested in my goodness as he is in my simple faithfulness. Because everybody talks about how good they are. But faithful? Mature, firm followers of Jesus Christ. Now, they're difficult to find. So Paul says, make sure you're walking those steps of maturity. Be alert. Stand firm. Grow up. How do I do that? How do I move forward to this type of Christian maturity? Can I suggest four things to you? Number one, yield to the Word and to the Spirit. Yield to the Word and the Spirit. Listen, if you don't open this book every day of your life, if you don't open this book every day of your life, you're not going to mature. It's just the simple basics of it. The Bible equates the Word of God to the sincere milk, the milk the baby needs to grow and mature and age. If we didn't feed Ellie milk, she's not going to grow up. She's going to starve. She could die. The same illustration applies to our lives today. This is the milk. It transitions into meat as we get older and learn more, and we need it every day of our lives. There was a reason why Jesus said, pray this way. Give us our daily bread. Daily bread. Have you ever thought about the fact that he didn't say, give us our weekly bread? Give us our monthly groceries? No, give us our daily bread. Why? You need it every day. Every day. And we don't become mature in our Christian life until we say, you know what? I'm going to yield to the Word. I'm going to get into the Word. Whether I read 3 verses a day or 30 chapters a day, it makes no difference what you do. Just eat. Just get into it. Just feed. Use it to grow up and yield to how the Spirit leads you. The second thing you need to do is follow godly counsel. We're talking about how do I get to Christian maturity, yield to the Word and the Spirit, and follow godly counsel. Godly counsel. Godly counsel. And listen, some of us have friends that are unsaved and not in church, and I applaud you for being connected to people who need to see your testimony of Christian growth. But those people are not going to help you to mature a Christian life. They're not. You don't go to close friends who are not in their Bibles, who are not in church, who don't love the Lord and seek counsel for everyday Christian life. That's hideous. That's unwise. That's so wrong. We need to seek godly counsel. We need to find those who are walking in steps of maturity and say, I need your direction. I need your advice. I need your counsel. Help me. Number three, make the necessary changes. make the necessary changes. And usually that's where we get stuck. But we're okay opening the Bible, reading a few verses. We're really all right coming to our pastor or someone else and saying, hey, I got a decision to make. I need your advice. I need your counsel. A lot of people don't even think about doing those things, but most people who are maturing and growing and wise seek godly counsel. But usually after we read the Bible and listen to the Spirit and seek godly counsel, we stop at three because we don't want to change. I mean, who wants to change? I mean, look at some of these men. They've been wearing the same shirt every Sunday for 3 years. They don't ever want to change. Who wants to change? Well, I know what the Word says. I know what my friend who's wise and mature at church told me to do, but I don't want to do that. This was not in my plans. This was not in my goals. Listen, we're not going to mature until we start making changes. We got to make some changes. You cannot remain who you are. I cannot remain who I am and expect to grow. I have to allow God to make me different, to change me. And then the fourth principle is this: start today. Start today. Don't start tomorrow. Don't start next week. Start today. Choosing to walk in steps of maturity. And here's the third point, as we see in verse 14, and we'll finish with this. Paul not only tells him in verses 5 through 12 to acknowledge the doors of opportunity. He tells him in verse number 13 to walk in steps of maturity. Here's number 3, commit to acts of charity. Commit to acts of charity. Would you look at verse number 14? We read it once earlier. Let's read it once more. Verse 14 says, let all your things be done with charity. Paul has emphasized love many times in this letter, including the entire 13th chapter, which was dedicated to the most important mark of Christianity, and that is love. The greatest of these is love. Now once again, he reemphasizes what he has already said a multiplicity of times throughout the letter. And that is, let everything you do, verse 14, let everything you do be motivated by and manifested in love. Love. Everything that you do, let it be by love. Love. As you love your husband, do it with love. Husbands, as you serve your wife, do it with love. As you raise your children, do it with love. As you come to church and sing and serve and worship and hear preaching, do it with love. Let everything that I do be done with love. Love. Because without love, leadership becomes dictatorship. Without love, maturity becomes prideful. Without love, opportunities become entitlements. That's why he says in verse 14 at the end of this little section, hey, make sure everything you do that it's by love. I want you to grow up. I want you to be courageous. I want you to be a leader. But make sure that you have love, because you can grow up and be a leader and it not be true leadership, because there's no love. You rather have a dictatorship, and you could get wise and you could receive all this counsel and you could be mature as a Christian. But if you don't have love, you're going to be prideful about it. Look how wise I am. Look how mature I am. Look how grown up I am. And look at all these opportunities. Look at them. Look at the doors. Make sure you have love when you walk through those doors of opportunity that God has prepared for you. Because if you don't, you're going to think you deserve all of these doors. And you're entitled to this new job. And you're entitled to all this that God has in front of you. Make sure everything you do is centered on love. Love. It's the greatest. It's the most important. It's the one thing. The one thing, if you take away all else, it's the one thing the world is going to know that you're a follower of Christ, is if you love. If you love. Peter said in 1 Peter 4:8, and above all things, there it is again, the greatest, above all, above all, above all, above everything. Above everything. What's that mean? Above everything. Above everything, list every external commitment you think you need to do in order to be known as a good Christian. He says, even above all of that, have fervent love among yourself. Not just a little bit of love. Fervent love. Passionate love. Aggressive love. Above everything, make sure that you love each other. And that's the essence of the principle. The essence of verse 14 is that love is supposed to permeate everything. Why do I come to church? Because I love God. Why do I read my Bibles? Because I love God. Why am I sharing my testimony, giving the gospel? Because I love God and I love sinners. Why do I fellowship and hang out with the people of my church? Because I love them. Why do I shake their hand? Because I love them. Why do I spend time with them? Because I love them. Why do I help them when they're in need? Because I love them. And on and on and on and on and on and on. Everything, everything. Love is to permeate everything. And you know why? You know why that's so important? 1 John 4:19. You know the verse? Because he... Let all things, let everything you do be done with love. Why? Because he, God, first loved us. That's why it's so important. Because you are never more like God than when you love. Never. You're never more like God than when you love. And I'm to do all things with charity because God first loved me. Are you acknowledging the doors of opportunity in your life? Are you guilty as I have been? More times than I'd like to admit. Pulling and prying and pushing the door down and then saying, look what God did. God didn't do it. I did it. Got to be prayerful. Got to be patient. We got to be pliable, flexible. Are you walking in steps of maturity? Are you alert, standing firm, growing up into the grace of Jesus Christ? Are you committed to living a life that is permeated